My guest today, James Martell from Martell Mechanical Limited, has built a serious business, over $7 million in revenue with a team of 60 people. Now, James is a member of our coaching group and has learned some hard lessons through growing quickly without the right systems and team. Now, in this episode, we're going to unpack how James went from chaos and everything stuck in his head to systems, structure, and real control, the mindset shift of tradesperson to CEO, and why James is now excited about scaling his business fast. Now, tune into this episode if you want a clear path to fast business growth. Now, welcome, James. Awesome to have you here today, buddy.
Thanks, Tony. I'm really excited to be here, and it's an honor to have this chat with you today.
I'm honored to have you, man, because you've done some cool stuff, and we're going to get into that. We'll talk about your wins, challenges, and some of the lessons, but let's sort of go back to the start. Now, you've been in business since you were a young fella, 21 years old. What pushed you to actually go out early on your own?
I always knew that I didn't want to work for somebody else. I knew that I didn't fit into a mold. I actually started in university. I went to business school. I was there for 2 weeks. Till I realized, whoa, this is definitely not for me. And I happened to get into plumbing by accident almost. It was just an opportunity. I took it. And once I got rolling, I was like, there's a business opportunity here. And I knew really early on that that's what I wanted to do.
Awesome. Can you talk me through the early years of business?
So when I first started out, I came out guns blazing, smarter than everyone else, knew it all, ready to take over the world. And I had a lot of success really early on from a revenue standpoint. We were up to 5-6 tradespeople really quickly, which I've learned since then, obviously, is a bottleneck that a lot of us hit. And, once you start getting revenue and you start getting absolutely buried in everything else that's going on, you start reacting instead of planning, and you're just kind of buried in the business. And so realistically, like, we did that for, the first, I would say, 12 years anyway, where you just can't figure out how to get past that point. And you're just, you're swamped all the time, and you're doing everything, and your wife's begging you to come home at night, and you're just, you think you're doing the right thing by working more. I can outwork this system. And it was really tough. Like it's a grind for sure.
Yeah. And so there were some challenges, wasn't there, in terms of, how you got on with the business and the finances?
Yeah. So we were, we were making money, but I was just an employee that was working double the amount, essentially. Like, you think that you're making money, but you're too busy to cost jobs properly, and you're too busy to market properly, and you're trying to do 50,000 things at the same time while you're working on the tools, and you just can't get anywhere like that. And I just couldn't, I kind of knew the things that I had to do, and I tried them, but never went all in. And really, it was like every time I tried something but didn't go all in, it just kind of flopped, and then the frustration built, and then you'd retract and you'd go back to what you knew, which was working harder and trying to get more work and pushing the guys harder and working more.
So that first foray into business had a pretty tough ending.
Yeah, so I was in business for, I think it was about 12 years. Like, I'm not great with dates, but we're gonna say 12 years. And because I was like the young, aggressive, easy to talk to, will drop everything and take care of you guy, I actually picked up, textbook here, but like, I picked up all the shitty clients, and I picked up the ones that didn't pay well. I picked up the ones that the big dogs, or the guys that had it together, or that I thought had it together, wouldn't do their work. And, we think, oh, that's great, we're picking up more work. And we found ourselves in a real hard time and a major cash flow crunch, and we couldn't break through it. And eventually, after, it was one really bad year that kind of ended it, where we had three contractors in the same year that went bankrupt that we were working for. And so the first one, it happens, and you it's like devastating. And then the second one happens, and you feel anger. And I joke, because by the time the third one happened, Tony, it's like, you're laughing about it. You're like, okay, this can't be happening. Like, it's over. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what you're going to do, but you're just like, you've done everything that you think that you can do to get out of it. And then, at that time we were incorporated here in Canada. I declared personal bankruptcy to kind of wipe all those debts. And looking back, it's kind of ironic, because I was at a place where I was actually about to break through, and and you know, you don't know it at the time, right? And when you're under that extreme stress and that extreme pressure, you know, you can't even really think clearly. Like, you can't step out of your own way to look at it. And I always joked, like, I could probably run someone else's business better than my own, because in my own business, I'm carrying all the emotional and all the risk. And so, you know, you just can't do it as analytically or as well as you think, just because you're buried in it and it's emotion.
I think that's a key thing that, you know, perhaps non-business owners don't understand, is the actual emotional crunch that comes with owning the business, with everything being on your shoulders and, you know, all relying on you pushing through. That does add a lot of pressure. And I think getting the headspace right around that and the systems right around that is really critical for pushing through, because there's no shame getting overwhelmed by that, because it's massive. Like, that pressure is enormous. And, you know, if you're listening and you're feeling that, please don't think that you're somehow, you know, a lesser person or anything. It is a really real challenge, and it's just about getting the right, you know, support and help to get through that as well. So let's move forward a little bit. I was going through the notes actually when you joined the coaching program that we run. I think it's about October 24. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear in your words, James, why was it important to make some changes and get help when you did?
When I came out of the bankruptcy, like, I looked at going to work for other people, and I looked at like multiple different avenues and what am I going to do? And it just always came back to, well, this is what I know. And I know that I can make enough money doing this on my own under the trunk of a car to, you know, take care of my family. And so I just kind of picked back up and started to do that and started to rebuild credit. And shortly after that, one of the residential builders that I was working for offered me a labor only job to do a multi-unit residential building. So it was 40 units, it's a ton of labor, and I took it at a ridiculously low price. And actually, I lost money doing it labor only. I learned a lot. I joke that it's a super expensive learning experience. So so that kind of like started to tick me back up, because now I was learning, you know, the multi-unit residential stuff that I had no idea about before. I'd never had experience with it. I'd never worked at a company that did it. I had no idea about systems or costing or shop drawings or change orders. And so that kind of put me on a trajectory up doing bigger work. And we slowly rebuilt, and then we started supplying our own material again. And then before I joined the coaching program, I had landed our biggest job to date. And I kind of did it. It was almost like I had the work, and I was like, oh boy, I'm past the point where I was before. I'm way out of my comfort zone, and I have no systems. It is all me 100%. I think at that time, maybe I had two office staff that were full time. And I just needed help. Like, I had nobody to lean on, and I had nobody to tell me what, you know, I should be doing or things to think about. So I was just preparing for where, you know, a spot that I knew that I couldn't handle on my own.
And how was your experience of business at that stage affecting you mentally and emotionally?
That's such a difficult thing, because as a business owner, like, you're constantly going through ups and downs. I had a guy that I worked with once, and he said, being a business owner, I wouldn't trade it for the world, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And it just,
oh, that's so true.
And it just stuck with me, because that's exactly how I felt about it. And, you know, you'd make a sale and you're on the highest high, and then you can't sleep at night because you don't know how you're going to make payroll in 2 days. And the clock is ticking, and you wake, you know, my buddy and I joke, like, it's like the business owner 3 a.m., right? You wake up at 3 and you go, oh my goodness, like, and the stress just hits you. And I was certainly not immune to that before I joined this program. And it's tough. Like, I've been doing this for 20 years, but before that, like, I've gone through like serious bouts of depression over this, and and debilitating depression and debilitating anxiety that, you know, the outside world just doesn't see, but you can't get out of bed because you feel like there's a blanket wrapped around you. And, you know, I at that time, like, during that spell, like, you'd go to the doctor and I'd be like, you know, there's something wrong with me. Like, I'm gonna have a heart attack, I'm dying. And he's like, man, you're stressed. I'm like, no, I'm good. And he'd be like, well, James, you have a new business, right? Yeah. You have two babies at home. Yeah. You have a wife that doesn't work. Yeah. You're stressed, man. Like, you need to go for a walk and, like, you know, take a deep breath. This is just stress. And it took a long time for me to figure that out, that that's actually what that was, because I felt immune to it. I was like, it can't be. I'm better than this. I'm smarter than this. I'll figure this out. And it's just, you just can't outwork it. And I tried for a long, long time.
I mean, and it's almost, you almost feel like a failure if you're prepared to acknowledge that you, that that is a challenge in your life. I mean, I've had similar challenges as well. The thing is, it's doubly bad, because if you don't get out of bed and go and do this stuff, you're not going to feed yourself. You're not going to eat. Your family's not going to eat. So there's no sick days for the business owner.
No, for sure. It's it was a very stressful time. And
it is.
And if I had worked for somebody else at that time, they would have fired me, like rightfully so, because I couldn't perform. Right. So I would say didn't have it figured out, had really no idea what I was doing, and just trying to grind through it, which is, I think, a pretty common thing in tradespeople, because we're not, you know, business people. We haven't gone to business school. We haven't mentored businesses. And so we're just, you know, hardworking people that think that they can get through it. And it's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. So just so the listeners know, James, can you tell us about your business when you joined the Million Dollar Tradie Program? You know, what type of work you're doing, revenue, size of team, how you were structured, and what your role was?
Yeah, so when I joined, I just signed a couple bigger jobs for us that were good. I think I had, I'm going to say 10 or 12 employees at the time. I had two office staff, continuing on the multi-unit residential side, and then picking away at some new construction homes. And I, you know, I was doing those primarily because that's what I knew best. About a dozen guys in the field, two in the office, and everything in paper and everything in my head.
Yeah. Okay. And how does the business look now?
So it's drastically different. And it's kind of fun when you look back down the mountain to see where you've come, because like we're all always looking for the next thing. And we have an admin team of 19 people. We have, you know, divisions for each kind of avenue within the business. We have a marketing manager and a content creator. We have, you know, that's one side. We have a sales coordinator and salespeople, and we have a COO who really takes the daily operations off of my shoulders and does an incredible job with that. We have a full accounting team. We have a purchasing team. We have a shop. Like, we have a lot going on the admin side. And on the field side, I think right now we're around 40. We're about to ramp back up for the year. Just winters in Canada kind of take a hit on the construction. And so we'll be, you know, probably 60 by the end of this year in the field. And right now we're right around 40.
So a lot of growth. And how have you seen the revenue change in the business over the last little while?
Well, revenue is consistent now, that's for sure. You know, we're doing about $750,000 a month. You know, in the summertime and towards the fall this year, we'll be pushing $1 million a month in revenue. So we have a $10 million goal this year for revenue, which I think is extremely attainable for us.
You crush it, brother. What have the results meant for you and the family?
I mean, people joke over the last 2 years about how much I travel. I take a good trip every month, like a really good trip every month. My children have had experiences as teenagers that you know, a lot of people never get in their life, to be honest. And I don't, you know, I have different stresses, obviously, because you're adding zeros to the end of the pile. But I'm not waking up wondering if Nova Scotia Power is going to shut off my power to my house. And so... It's the quality of life, you know, money's not everything, but certainly the experiences are helpful and really nice for sure. And, you know, I'm building a new house for my family that, you know, I definitely couldn't have done a few years ago. And it really has been great the last couple of years.
Yeah. And how do you actually feel about business and life yourself?
I feel lighter. You know, I'm not going to lie and say that I don't have sleepless nights, because I'm in a huge transition phase right now with systems, and we've really kind of ripped the building down that I built on straw, and I'm keeping the building up, but also completely rebuilding the base of it to as, you know, as rock solid as I possibly can. And so there's still a lot of stressful times for sure. But I feel like a business owner now, and I don't feel like a plumber. You know, like as a tradesperson, we attach our identity to being this hardworking, rugged tradesperson, which ironically is not even who I am. But because that's what I did, that's what your identity attaches to. And something in the last couple of years and has really clicked. And I don't feel like that anymore. Like, I feel like a business owner. I feel like I'm making, you know, decisions daily that aren't like how a pipe is installed in the ground. I'm looking at financials and systems and how to go to the next level and really doing what, when I was a teenager, I really wanted to do. You know, I always wanted to be a suit and tie guy. And then I ended up being a plumber, right? And now I'm at a point where I get to do some of the fun stuff, right?
I think there's a really important distinction that you've talked about there, identity, James, is that it's very easy to get tied up in seeing yourself in a certain way, as you said, as a doer, as a tradesperson, as the person who has to solve the issues in the business. You see yourself as the best person in the business to solve all the problems. All of those things what actually help you grow from, you know, a small operation into a medium-sized operation, and we may be talking 5, 10, 15, even 20 people. But that identity is what locks you in that position as well, because once you go past a certain level, your job is to actually lead the team and strategize the business. And that requires quite a different identity, because the output that you create is not direct. You can't actually see the results of your work, the results of your physical and sometimes mental efforts. And that's very difficult for a lot of people, but it's an absolutely essential identity shift to happen, because otherwise you might grow, but then you keep stuffing it up by actually sticking your hand in areas where it's not wanted anymore, and you kind of undermine your team and you spoil the delegation, and then you start to cycle through problems. So I think that's an amazing awareness that you've had there, but it's absolutely critical for everyone who wants to grow and scale a business.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride, and you go from thinking that you know it all to going, oh wait, I know nothing. Like I literally know nothing, and I'm watching these large plumbing and HVAC companies going like, well, if they can do it, like there's got to be a way that I can figure this out. And honestly, Tony, you know, it's credit to the Profitable Tradie program, because like a lot of us just don't know, and we need business coaches. Like we need people that can say, you know, just hold up. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? You know, you need to start looking at it this way. And really, it wasn't until I joined this program that I really made that identity shift. It's been absolutely huge.
Yeah, it's a big thing, and leadership becomes the job. As you know, to go to the next level, which is definitely a big shift. And I mean, you've made lots of changes, James. Some you know, at that mental level, and obviously a lot of tools and stuff you've put in place. And I'd love to focus on a few that I think have made a huge difference, you know, so we can share some of the wisdom with the listeners. So let's talk systems. You had largely a paper-based, you know, operation initially. So what have you done to get better data and manage the company more effectively through systems?
Yeah, and I could talk about this for 24 hours straight, because systems, you know, it's this word that gets floated around, but it really is the thing that has completely changed the way that I see the business. And I mean, you know, at some point about 6 months ago, like we didn't even have job management software. And I mean, I never worked for a company that had that. I didn't really know what that was. So that's a huge one. You know, we implemented Simpro and went with a job management software. We learned really quickly that the data that comes out of it is only as good as the person that's running the program. And so we had a couple failed attempts with that until I went again. I mean, the theme of the day is going all in, like until I went, okay, wait. And we hired an automation and systems manager, and he's a software developer. He is brilliant, and he's really pushed us to connect the dots for all these pieces, because in our business, as you grow, you know, the problems grow with it, And so you go from, you know, having one guy buying one thing of material a day to 50 people buying 50 materials in different places. And the information needs to go from, you know, Susie to Paul to little Johnny. And it's, how do you make this all happen? So going back to the main point, like, what are the biggest impacts systems-wise? Job site management software, we have streamlined all internal communication into one spot. We use Slack now, and Slack is kind of has a side of it that you can do like software development and coding for dummies, where like pretty much anybody can kind of build a workflow in Slack. And you know, we've added some quick workflows to put band-aids on there. We're building our own app, like, so that anything that our job management software can't do, we're not fighting with workarounds. We're literally going right to the, you know, the core problem. We're saying, no, this doesn't work for us. Our business isn't the same as everyone else's. This is what we need. And so we're building that out, you know, and the list goes on and on. Like, everything from master task lists, so that every task in our entire business, I think we're up to, I think maybe 300 tasks, is listed out and it's assigned to somebody. There's an SOP built so that they know how to do it, so that if we need to transfer that thing to somebody else, that we don't have to retrain. It's been a wild ride systems wise, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think this is the key to scaling a business, is it has to be out of the key people's heads, not only your head, but other key people in the business, so that all the other team members can actually see how things are done, and you can measure them on that. That's how you actually, well, that's how McDonald's works. You know, 16-year-olds can do it, and they can't even tidy their room. So if it's good enough for them, I think we can definitely do it in a, you know, in a plumbing or HVAC or electrical business for sure. How has having the right systems changed things for you in the business?
First of all, without systems, or, you know, and again, I have this, like, a system's not anything until you actually put it on paper and you implement it and you enforce it, and it's somebody's accountable to it, right? Like, you know, I had all kinds of systems when it was just me and six guys. It's just, I had no idea that they were systems yet. And, you know, you can talk about them, but until it's like measurable and somebody's held accountable to it, it's not really a system. Like, The biggest thing is that as the company grew, like, my brain can only handle so much. And so when I take that out and I put that on paper digitally, like, because we're not doing paper, but as soon as I take that out and I put that somewhere centrally, I don't need to really think about that every second of every day anymore. I can go find that information if I need it, but I don't have to memorize it. And I don't have to wake up at 3 a.m. going, oh my goodness, did the mail get checked? You know, one of my guys in the program jokes, because I always come back to the mail analogy when I'm talking about my systems, because, you know, we have three different mailboxes, and they laugh at me. Well, James, we don't have to worry about the mail. That's not really a problem. And I'm like, yeah, I know that. But the joke is that somebody has to check the mail, and somebody has to know how often to check that mail. Somebody has to know who's responsible and where the key is kept in case that person's gone. Like, And I've done that with every single thing in my business, from the, again, checking the mail, right up to payroll or balancing certain accounts and all that sort of stuff. And so really it's getting it out of my brain, getting it into a spot where I can train others. But even better than that is where other people can train others.
And that's where the juice happens.
Yeah. And it's, I kind of joke, Tony, it's like, I thought about this last night when I was thinking about this podcast, because building a business and scaling to the way that I have and the way that I want to continue to scale, it's almost like creating a mini pyramid scheme within your business, right? At first, you're the only person selling the thing. And then all of a sudden you have five people under you and they're selling the thing. And then all of a sudden you're not talking to the person that's installing the pipes in the ground anymore. You're talking to the person who's talking to the person who's talking to the person. And each person kind of divides down five or six people till you get to where the pipes are going in the ground, right? And that's actually been a really enlightening thing. I used to hate meetings. Like, I was too good for, I'm like, if people need a meeting, then I don't want them working for me because they're not doing their job. And what I've learned is like, I have, like, you know, I have weekly meetings with six or seven people. Well, I can spend an hour with those people, realign expectations, figure out what they're tackling for the next week, figuring out any bottlenecks, kind of align them once a week, and then they go work 40 hours a week, and I'm not doing that work. They're doing that 40 hours, and I do that 5 or 6 times, and each one of those people are setting out to do my vision for the other 40 hours a week, right? So it's pretty incredible thing.
Yeah, and as you grow and scale, meetings and communication rhythms are the absolute critical importance in the business, because they are the communication channels through which, you know, you check progress, you provide accountability, and your team is accountable back to you. And also you can reset expectations, train, and make sure everyone's on the same page. And so the thing is, you have to schedule those in advance as well as you get busy, and part of your system and your business becomes your meeting and your communication rhythm system.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, I think you're like us, probably learned from some of the things we've done, is you've got to plan all that out in advance. It's all in the calendar, so everyone knows what it is. And it's in the calendar probably for a year in advance, because when you've got 60 or 80 people in your business, you can't just do it ad hoc and on the fly. It doesn't work. Absolutely critical.
And I mean, just going back to the calendar, like, spoiler for anybody that's looking to sign up with this program, the first week you build your own calendar and you're going like, I've never had a calendar before. Like, and even like, I was resistant to that, you know, up until maybe even a year ago. And then you go, where I'm at now, you're like, oh shit, I get it now. Like, the calendar, the default, like, that is the magic. That's where it all happens, right? And so it's like, yeah, I could not even live without my calendar now, and couldn't do what I do without having these touch points with the key people, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that calendar thing is massive. And you're right, it's so kind of counterintuitive. It's like, I'm so busy and I've got too much to do. But until you actually take control of your life and put things in your calendar that are actually going to move the business forward and your life forward, nothing really changes.
Absolutely.
And it's a brutal exercise to start with, but it's absolutely foundational. And I think most people have the experience that you have, is like, oh yeah, a little bit resistant at the start, or they can see that's a good idea. But the longer you go on in business, the more important you realize it is, because your time becomes even more important the bigger your business is, because you're dealing with more zeros, as you said, and you're controlling more things. And so you've got to be very careful and parsimonious with your time, which is huge. So James, for people who are listening and still running the whole business out of their head, what would your advice be to them, and why?
So if they're running out of their head, so if they want to grow and if they want to get to that next level, and if they want some freedom, and if they want some financial stability, like, you got to get it out of your head and into some form of digital format now. Like, and I mean, if you're old school and you have a notebook and you want to do it in that, that's great. You know, eventually it's probably going to get out of there, but you got to get it out of your head and not be resistant to other people taking over for things. Right. And I mean, it's a segue into hiring, because, you know, the first thing people hire is an admin, right? Like, that's just, oh, I'll hire an admin because I have these tasks that I can, you know, hand off. Well, maybe that's not even what if they're scared to hire an estimator because it's too hard to train them, or they're scared to hire an operations manager because they're too scared to train them? Well, you know, training an admin is not, you know, easy either. You just have to start, and you have to offload tasks to someone else. And you have to be calculated about it. Yes. And you have to be cautious, but you got to get these things out of your head and into the hands of other people if you want to take that next step and grow.
Yeah. And the thing is, a lot of people want to get all the systems right before they hire anyone. And that's a real trap, because you're already flat out busy. And sometimes the best people to build the systems are the people actually doing the job. And so, you know, one of the roles for your admin manager or admin person would be to actually write down the tasks as they learn them.
Yeah.
And they systemize it as you go. I mean, we've got 80 odd plus people in our team. I haven't written any of the systems, but the business is very well systemized, basically because I suck at writing systems and I have a short attention span. But the people build the plane as they're flying it. That's the way to do it. If you try and do it all yourself, it's so hard.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, literally up until 6 months ago when my coach in this program was like, you can't do this without job management software. You need to do it. I didn't know what I was going to use. I didn't know. You got to move, and you got to make these changes, because if you don't, you're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over and over. And I did that for a long, long, long time, right? So,
yeah. So, James, you're focused on getting good financial information in the business. Now, whereas before things were, you know, they were loose. Can you talk us through the changes you've made around managing the financials?
Yeah, so I have always been behind financially, like with financial data. Like when I first started out, my mother-in-law was a chartered accountant. She did my books, but she didn't work for me. And so she did it to help. And so, you know, I was really slow at getting her information, which meant she was slow getting it back. And you're always 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 months behind getting like accurate data. And, you know, that just does not work when you have as much money coming and going as we do. Like you can't do that. Like, and so it's, you know, before we would underhire and we would max people out. And now I'm at a point where I'm almost overhiring because I know that we're going to go to that next phase. And that way I can get financial data every day rather than three months later. Because before when, you know, I wasn't even looking at the data, right? Like I'm looking at the bottom line at the end of every 3 months going like, oh my God, we did it again. Why didn't we make money? Or yeah, it's a great 3 months. We can spend some money and grow. But like there was no consistency whatsoever. And interestingly, before this program, honestly, I didn't even really fully know what to look for, right? Like what are the big companies doing? What are their GPs? What are the, you know, what are their labor allowances and where should overheads be in relation to revenue and what's a healthy profit margin? And, you know, so some of that just came from learning in this program. And then once you are aware, it's like, oh, I need to go find out how to get that information right away. Right. Which isn't for me. Like I have people that get me that information.
Yeah. So, James, quick question. If you had one piece of data or financial information that you recommend people get, what would it be?
There's a lot of focus right now on GP per hour. Our business is kind of complicated because we do 5 different trades in-house. And then within those 5 trades, we do 3 to 4 different, you know, everything from service work up to multi-unit residential. And there's a lot of emphasis right now on getting our gross profit per hour per job type. And that way we can benchmark and try to improve. You know, it may be that some work is less than others. And it's not that I would just throw that away because maybe there's a strategic reason that I have to bundle this with another thing. But without it, you can't make any decisions. You're just running blind. And so having the data doesn't mean that you have to act right away and make, you know, oh my goodness, like I'm not making any money on that trade or that work type. I'm going to get rid of it because there could be other consequences or other reasons that you're doing it. But I guess that's me on a ramble, Tony, to say like GP per hour per job type. Yeah.
It's massive, isn't it? Because you can only invoice your tradespeople's labor once, you know, 1 hour of labor, and depends on what type of job that you're doing will depend on how much money you make from it. So like you said, you want to try and maximize the revenue or the profit per that hour spent. And as you said, you don't have to cut everything that's lower, but it definitely gives you insight into where you want to focus and understanding what works and what doesn't. And I think most people, when they see that, they automatically start making some decisions around where they're heading, which will increase that. It's kind of magic. I love it when I see that happening, but it's just about getting the right information.
Yeah, and something like a light bulb went off on one of your podcasts, and it may, you know, there were a few things that brought me to you guys, but I was listening to the podcast before, and you guys made a comparison to GP per hour and markup, not to confuse markup and margin. There's lots of podcasts that talk about that, but it was basically saying, look, you know, water heaters are a commodity here that anybody can buy at any hardware store, and we barely get any markup on them. You know, like I might be able to get 10% out because, you know, Susie down the street can buy from Home Depot for less than I can do it. So, okay, we only get 10% markup. I won't do water heater work because I can charge a fitting out at 200%. Okay, well, if I'm under the sink for an hour and I charge a $1 fitting out at 200%. I didn't make any money on the material, and I just had my regular charge-out rate for my labor. But if the water heater is $1,000, and I can only mark it up 10%, well, now all of a sudden that 1 hour of labor, I have another $100 on top of that. So now all of a sudden I have a $200 GP per hour on that work type. And oh man, if I can do four of those a day, now all of a sudden, like, the dollars that one tech can bring in is way more at a lower percent. Yes. But per hour, he's making me way more money.
Yeah. That's absolutely critical to understand.
What about team performance? How has the financial numbers helped with that?
Well, there's two different avenues, really. You have the admin side and you have the guys in the field side. Knowing my numbers on an admin side is critical, because I can, give feedback based on real data, right? Like, and when you have, financial literacy, or you know what your numbers are, you can make decisions, with that, and you're not just running around blind, less likely to burn employees out, ability to give tradespeople more money, right? Or bonuses, or build bonus structures. Whereas before, like, you don't know where the money's coming and going, so you don't know what you can do with that. Gives you the ability to buy better gear, or buy vans, or hire the right support staff. Like, it's just been, I think it's been huge for my team all around.
It gives you visibility and knowledge, which aids decision making. And I think so many people find decision making hard, because basically there's just a vacuum of information. It's like a fog. It's like, I don't know if this is working or not. And that means you do things that don't work, and often you stop doing the things that do work, which is probably even worse. So it's massive.
Yeah, and you're doing it on gut feel at that point.
Yep.
Like, you don't really know. And one of the major tasks that me and my developer or systems manager is working on right now is building us dashboards where, because I don't need to know every single number. I don't need to know the exact dollar the insurance amount, or the exact dollar the gas amount, or the exact dollar an hour raise that Johnny got last week. But there are metrics that you can watch trending that, if you're watching them, you're going to act on them. Because when you're guessing, you don't have a clue. But when you're watching, let's say, 15 metrics, and how they interact with each other, and you can see them every day and the data is accurate, you can make really good decisions really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's massive, massive. How important has been building out the proper structure, like having the right roles, like ops, admin, estimating, all that sort of thing, in terms of giving you control and enabling growth?
I mean, you can't do it without those roles. Like, there are roles in the business that you just can't, there's just no way to get past. Take an operations manager, for example. If you don't have an operations manager for the right decision at the right time, then you're just going to lose the work anyway, or you're not making money on it, or even worse, you're losing money on it. And so, the operations manager cost comes in and you're like, oh my goodness, how am I going to pay this guy or this girl, right? And it's like, oh wait, what's going to happen if I don't pay them, right? Which is way worse. And we've built this client relationship, and they're angry and they're grumpy for callbacks, and my staff are grumpy that they're getting negative calls all the time, and the guys in the field are grumpy because we're complaining all the time and just harping on them. And so it's just absolutely critical that you put the people in place that can do things better than I can. And that's true. Like all of the key people at my company can outperform me in whatever they're doing.
That's a really critical point there. I think hiring people who are better than you, and sometimes as owners and founders, we hire people that aren't as good as us because we're like, maybe they cost less, or maybe we don't even believe that those people are out there, actually.
Yeah.
And when you hire people that are not as good as you, you've got to train them. It takes a lot of work, and actually you're not increasing the capacity of the business. Because actually the average skill level is reducing as you hire people, which is a terrible thing to do.
Yeah. And what's funny, and I joke about this when we were at our last boot camp, it's like the people that are really good in my company and they don't ever annoy me. Like there's never any like, oh man, I wish they would have done that thing, or why didn't they do that? I don't have to harp on them. I don't have to realign expectations every 2 weeks. I don't have, like, they're just really good at what they do. And I couldn't sit at a desk for 8 hours a day and structure numbers. I couldn't build computer programs. I can't build social media campaigns. I can't structure sales teams and follow-ups and CRM. So you've got to find people that are really good at what they do. And they're out there, because it would be really naive to think that you're the best at everything, or there wouldn't be giant companies out there, right? Like, we're a small player in our world. There's huge union shops that are full of people, I'm sure, that are incredible at what they do and could outperform me in every, there are people out there that are better, for sure.
And something that really helped me, with this whole business journey was realizing, if you pay someone, let's say, I don't know, $70,000, you might get an okay person. Then you try hiring someone who's worth $100,000 and you're like, wow, they're actually quite smart.
Okay.
I'm learning stuff. And then you hire someone who's $130,000, and you're like, wow, I never knew people like this. Then try hire someone who's $180,000, $200,000, and you're like, this person is like from outer space.
Right.
Like, they are just incredible.
Absolutely.
And so you get to a point where all you want to do is hire expensive people because they're so good. And that really, really makes a huge difference. And I know not everyone's going to be at that level yet, but you will get there as you grow a business.
Absolutely.
And you're blown away by the quality.
You know, so, and one thing to say on that is that people forget you're not, let's say it is that $200,000 mark. You're not paying that tomorrow. Like, you're paying that every 2 weeks. And Phil talks all the time, like, good people pay for themselves like immediately. It's not even like there's not even a training like they hop in and they make an impact immediately. I talk about my COO. I bring him on. He is exceptional at what he does, and he brought contacts with him from the construction industry. He's made a huge impact right off the bat, and there was no zero lag time whatsoever. The girl that runs my office and is the head of our accounting team, like, she came in and was like, this is a mess. Like, we got to clean this up like right now. And I'm like, okay, great. Like, how do you fix it? Right. And those are the people that really move the needle.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges for, people listening is like, oh, well, I kind of know I need these, but I'm scared to do it. And maybe they're not money making roles and they're not out there, doing the jobs. But I think, as you've said, the key things are, number one, you'll never grow if you don't do this. You have to have capacity to grow, which means you need to build the factory of your business. And two, these people pay for themselves. It's investment, not cost.
Yeah.
And that's the key difference. So I think that's a massive thing, if you are listening, to understand that, to get your head around that, because that really unlocks whole new levels of growth and development in a business.
Yeah.
So we recently hang out in Nashville, which was a lot of fun. And I think something that really impressed me, James, was the speed with which you set up. It was actually a ENPS process, Employee Net Promoter Score, which is one of the trainings that we did. Can you talk me through why you see the speed of implementation being so important for success?
I think that a lot of people, they get stuck and they have all these great ideas. And, being in Nashville, you're just surrounded by so many smart people. And they all have incredible ideas. And I think that it's really important to act on them. It's one thing to be calculated and to think and to take your time on that sort of thing. But when it comes to things that I see as a high value, it's like immediate. And I pay you guys for business coaching and I trust what you say. And so when I see something that I'm not doing, that I know that'll have a major impact, like employee satisfaction or knowing, whether your employees are happy or not, or how you can improve, it's like, oh, boom, we gotta go. Why am I not doing this? And then for me, it's like, because we've got the foundation, it's like, okay, we're going to add that to our task list. We're going to assign that to somebody. I'm going to instruct them how often it needs to be done. They're going to do their own research and block it out in their default calendar. They're going to go do the training webinar on it. They're going to build their own SOP on it. They're going to bring it to me. And then it's part of their job. Right. And then, we meet with these people once a week. Have you completed all your tasks? Okay. What challenges do you have? Are you doing that thing? Okay. You're not. Why not? You need to do that thing. Right. And I don't think that these things or systems or putting good implementation in place needs to be a massive thing, but you do have to build a little bit of the foundation first to get to that point. But it's critical. It is critical. And I listened to a podcast somewhere along the way, and they talked about if it's a decision that, you know, if you're a business owner and you can make a decision that's reversible quickly, then make the decision quickly. And if it's a decision that's going to have long-lasting impacts, those are the ones that you really need to sit back and really analyze. But when it comes to something like making sure my staff are happy, it's like it's just a no-brainer for me to be like, okay, we're doing that. And I wasn't supposed to be on my laptop, but I did, and I made it happen right then because I'm like, this just needs to happen, right?
Well, and there's a couple of really beautiful things at play here. Number one is results happen after action. And you have to take action to get things into the scoring zone. And I think a lot of people get really stuck overthinking it, and they never really get things into the scoring zone. And therefore, they don't get the result, and they don't build the confidence that actually change can make things happen. Okay. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is great. And number two, I think you alluded to it earlier, is you grow a business, but it is like a giant sort of pyramid scheme. And not only is the money and the workflow flowing up and down, but you've got more people in your business as you grow. And so it's much easier to make things happen.
Yeah.
This is a key thing. And so your role becomes to make a decision, mm-hmm. and your team's role is to implement that decision.
Absolutely.
And I think a really successful business owner doesn't actually do that much physically, but they make a lot of decisions and put a lot of wheels in motion for the team to implement. And it's the classic kind of the rich get richer in this regard, because you've got more capacity, more people. You know, you've got 10, 20, 30, 50, 60 people doing stuff rather than just one person. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a pretty cool situation, isn't it?
It really is. And it's not even like, I give so much credit to our team. Like, we have built, and it's not just me, it's just the culture and the people that are in it. I've learned how important that is and how bad you need to protect that and make sure that there's no bad seeds. And sometimes it's hard to get that information out of people because they don't want to talk bad about Johnny or bad about Susie, but it's like, you have to have that lens on, because those are the people that are moving the train. Like, I always say, like, I might be steering the thing, but I'm not shoveling the coal and I'm not figuring out where we're going. You know, like they're doing all that. I'm just kind of like guiding us along. Right. And so it's just absolutely critical. And I'm lucky and super fortunate that I have a team that I do, where I can make those decisions fast, because I'll only hire people that work like me and understand, well, James is, you know, because I've had bad admin before where they're like, you're moving too fast. Like, we don't understand. We can't. And it's like, okay, I get that. But maybe that worked at that stage in the business, but that isn't going to work anymore to where we're at now. And so, you know, we're all the same in a sense, where like we're all interested in moving forward and moving quickly and seeing what we can do with this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that culture is huge. So, James, I'd love to dive into some of the mindset changes that you've had to make to get the success and the growth that you've had. What are the key things that you've learned here?
Mindset thing, you know, as you go through life, it's an identity shift. That's a huge one. You have to really want to go to that next level, or you need to want to be a business owner instead of just working on the tools. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, absolutely not. And you know, there's some really successful businesses where, you know, the main guy still works on the tools, but he does have a COO or a CEO and he's doing it because he loves it, but he still wants to grow the business. I think that it's just really important that you get out of your own way. You start trusting that there are people out there that are better than you are at the things that need to get done. And really, for me, again, it's just a huge identity shift from tradesperson to where I actually feel like the CEO now, where, you know, it's just a completely different way of thinking.
It is. It's very powerful. How important has been getting outside help in terms of your business journey?
There's no way. Like, I can't really put into words the impact that having coaching, you know, and whether it's Profitable Tradie or whether you get somebody else, but hopefully they're as good. I would argue that maybe they're not. I'm a little biased, Tony, but just because I've seen what can happen when you really fully commit. But I think that having outside help is absolutely critical because you don't know what you don't know. And I thought I knew because I knew what net profit meant, but I had no idea anything else that was going on. And whether it's confidence, having somebody that has your back, who you really feel like actually has your back, whether it's very explicit advice, whether it's meeting other tradespeople where you can bounce ideas off of if you're unsure and nobody really knows because there's no like perfect way of doing it. So you have to get some outside help where you're like, I need some ideas here. I just wish that I'd done, I wish that I found business coaches 15 years ago when I had a mentor that told me I needed it, right? But I was too smart. I was too ego-filled. I just thought that I could figure it out on my own. So it's critical. It's been for sure life-changing.
Yeah, and the teacher appears when the student's ready to, and that's an important part of it. What's been the most valuable thing about the help that you've received?
Confidence, I think, to be honest. Like having somebody who my coach is just like, do this thing. You need to do this thing. Why are you not doing this thing? Let's go back to the meetings. Like 6 months ago, I was still in, a lot's happened in the last year, but even 6 months ago, I said to my coach, I'm not good at the meeting thing. I'm not good at holding people accountable, and I'm not good at structured meetings. I have major ADHD. I work on impulse. I work on, what that shiny thing is that's what I'm chasing and all he said was, you can't do that anymore. Like, don't do that. You have to get better. Like, you need to dig deep and find out whatever it is that's stopping you from doing that. And you need to be better. And so having somebody that's like, that you can trust that, you really do feel like has your back, who's just saying, don't do that. There's a better way.
Right. It's massive. Because it can be quite a lonely journey as well. And sometimes you need the reassurance that you're on the right track. And sometimes you need the uppercut to get you back on the right track.
Absolutely.
I think we all need that. I certainly do.
Yeah, absolutely. You get blinders on and you're kind of just going down the track. And then, having mentors and having peers that are in the same, sometimes super shitty situation or on the flip side, who will actually celebrate with you. That's the other thing that people don't talk about in business is it's like, it's taboo to celebrate, it's taboo to buy a nice car. It's taboo to go on vacation. It's, people are, oh, it must be nice. And you feel like shame about some financial freedom or financial success. But then you find a group of people and these aren't just the coaches that I work with here. It's the people that you meet in your squads and your boot camps and your Q&A's online and all the fun things that we do in this program where I can literally text them and say, man, I made $100,000 last week. And they'd be like, man, great job. You imagine saying that to your, a lot of people, they'd be like, you're an ass. Like, why are you bragging about this? Like, I'm not bragging. I just don't have a way to celebrate when things are going good. Right. So yeah.
That's amazing. So, James, this has been a great chat, man, and I really appreciate your candor and your openness about your journey. It's inspiring, and I know the listeners will find it inspiring. And I guess what really excites me from our discussion today is that you've actually built the foundation of a very substantial business, and you will go 10 million. This is a business that's set up to do 20 or 30 million, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the goal.
And we've seen it before, and you're putting in that legwork now, which will allow you to scale quickly, but also profitably and with control. And that's the key thing. So you can enjoy the benefits of the money you're making. There's no point making a lot of money if it's just chaos. That's not what we want, but that's not where you're heading, man. And I'm very excited about that. And, I just want you to really enjoy that journey.
Thank you so much, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here and honestly an honor to be able to do this. So yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, brother. Take care.
Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of the Profitable Tradie Podcast.